practice is here. College basketball teams switching from an 8-hour week to a 20-hour week calendar. The month of September rapidly wrapping up and the calendar about to flip into October, which means we are less than 6 weeks away from college basketball tipping off on November 7th. I cannot wait. I know Brad cannot wait. We've been plugging along with these conference previews, and today we've got another league that I think you guys will enjoy, the Big Ten, which is always a very competitive league trying to get over the hump and finally win a national championship, which it has not done in quite some time. But there's just an energy in the air. I got tons of calls from coaches the last couple of days. Just wanted to check in because practice was starting. Wanted to know what was going on. We had the Almanac drop. People, of course, we're supporters of the Almanac on this year podcast, even though they're not paying us to say that. I was leafing through trying to see if there was any futures over at the BovadaSportsbook.com that were worth hunting based on any new intel. And I'm starting to break down. I have to say, Brad, I'm starting to break down and starting to buy the Jadeon Ladie thing at San Diego State enough that I threw a couple bucks on SDSU 60-1 to win it all.
So what's the basis for optimism? This is a guy who was at Ohio State as a freshman, didn't do anything really. He goes to TCU and he was very hyped. I think he was hyped at Ohio State as well.
He was hyped there
by like Rothstein and the well embedded moles.
Coaches love Jadeon Ladie. Unfortunately,
last year he red shirts and now what's in store for year four of Mr. Ladie?
Well, I think the biggest thing, and I was talking to Jim Root about this. We've just been so starved for the like sit out transfer practice report where the player is, you know, the best player in practice. I mean, this is common practice. I mean, we're old enough to remember this where, you know, the kid would be, you know, playing would do the sit out year. And because they're playing as the scout team guy, they're always like, oh, my God, this guy is incredible in practice. This guy is going to be so good.
And then shouts to Ben McLemore.
Sure. Yeah. There's plenty of examples.
Yeah.
This guy was the scout team guy. He was balling out. He was the best player. Oftentimes it doesn't work out. But I also thought at 60-1, like San Diego State to me is a top 15 team. We'll talk about them at some point on our mid-major show or our Mountain West show, however we decide to break it up. But like when they're in the same category as like Virginia and Florida and USC to win a national championship, like roll the dice, right? Like I don't think San Diego State's winning a national championship. I don't think a mid-major is going to win a national championship, but they're elite on defense. They bring in dudes. And if you've got this like X factor former, like good recruit in Ladie, that was enough sweetener for me to throw a few bucks on the Aztecs to win it all.
I don't know. I think I like Virginia and Florida better than the Aztecs, but we'll see.
Well, then you can fire up Bovada and place a bet.
You said that they were all 60-1?
Yes, Florida, Virginia, and San Diego State, 60-1 each.
I should go on there, onto Bovada.
Give it a shot.
Probably Virginia out of those three or four teams that you
don't
just
you hate there. Virginia? Is that a thing?
No. I'm always right on Virginia.
That's true.
Whenever they're good, I'm in on it. Whenever they disappoint, I'm in on it too. It's because people, you know, kind of similar to your thing about the sit-out transfer, people haven't caught on that Virginia is about retention. When players come back, they're good. When there are new players, they're overrated. That doesn't mean that they're bad when they're new players, but everyone's going to overrate them when they add the Sam Hauser, when they add the Trey Murphy. But it's when last year, I guess you could throw Franklin Gardner in there as well. And they say, oh, geez, Virginia disappointed. But everyone's back. And that's where Virginia thrives. And that's why they're going to be a top 20 team this year.
Well, we are hunting for top 20 teams today as we get into the Big Ten. As we said, a league that is missing the national championship run, which has not had those teams break through on the national stage lately. Despite the fact that it has consistently been one of the three best conferences in the regular season, and in fact, in 2020 and 2021 was the number one conference per KenPom, just has not, again, had that necessarily a breakthrough on the national stage. We'll see if this is the year. I think looking at the conference as a whole, before we get into these teams, Brad, I think you'd agree, like, there's not a team that I would be overly optimistic as winning a championship, but there's a lot of depth, and it's just going to be another year where this league maybe beats itself up, it winds up with a bunch of bids, it gets to the NCAA tournament, and then when there's like one team left of the Sweet 16, everyone clowns on the Big Ten.
I mean, there are a lot of good teams, and there are a lot of teams that I think us especially are going to be a little more cautious on, but like you could easily see them being really good. Like Purdue is one where I have Purdue in the kind of mid-30s. But I could certainly see a scenario where Zach Edey kind of extends his dominance and the whole lack of a point guard thing doesn't matter because they have Zach Edey and David Jenkins bounces back and Brandon Newman bounces back and all of a sudden Purdue's really good and like wins the league. And we saw last year with Wisconsin, right, where we're going to talk about Wisconsin with kind of a shrug, like, yeah, bubble NIT sort of team. We did last year and they ended up, you know, being like a three seed.
Well, we will, as always, go from champion of the league down, working based on last year's standings, give you our thoughts on everyone, and go. So we had a shared Big Ten title last year between the aforementioned Wisconsin Badgers and the Illinois Fighting Illini. Illinois got the number one seed in the Big Ten tournament. We'll start there. Another great year, right? I mean, all things considered, lose Ayo Dosunmu and still get a four seed, win the Big Ten. Great year. Didn't break through in the NCAA tournament like they obviously had hoped, but proof that Brad Underwood, in my mind, is one of the, you know, top tier coaches in this game, that he was able to maintain things as well as he did in Champaign, deal with so many injuries with Curbelo. I mean, having to rework his whole team with Grandison being in and out at times, with Kofi out at points. I mean, this thing was very, very disjointed, and Brad Underwood found a way to win the league, and I think deserves a lot of credit for that. And now has an opportunity to really remake his roster. And I think that's the biggest thing when you look at this group. It doesn't resemble at all the Illinois teams that we have seen in recent years. No dominant interior presence. This is going to be all about length, all about athleticism, potentially the ability to press defensively, certainly the ability to switch one through four, potentially even one through five at times, depending on the lineups that they roll out. You know, this is a team that is built to be positionless, that is built to space people out. And that's very different from what we've seen from Illinois. They're not going to have that go-to presence the way that they've had in the past. But with the additions of guys like Karen Shannon, guys like Matthew Meyer, and then the talented freshman, Ty Rogers, and Sky Clark. I think that there's a core here that has the chance to be the Big Ten's best team. And I'm backing them as the Big Ten's best team.
As am I. I have them 15th, which is probably as high as I've seen them.
Maybe, I also have them 15th.
Maybe I've seen some with them a touch higher, but I just went back and looked where I had them last year. I had them 10th. The return of Kofi was huge, and it's just given that he's not – I don't even think he has a two-way, right, in the NBA?
He's probably Exhibit 10.
Yeah, I'll confirm that. Just what a missed opportunity. You know, he could have joined Hunter Dickinson and Trace Jackson Davis.
He's a free agent. He's not even in Exhibit 10.
Yeah. And Oscar Tshiebwe, Drew Timmy, you know, really embraced his year of the big. And if he came back, this Illinois team would have been – up in that top tier, with the five or six teams that everyone has at the top. As of now, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised, or I guess I wouldn't be shocked if they finish in the top 10, you know, having them 15th. You mentioned Terrence Shannon was a really big add. He's someone who has NBA potential, kind of took a step back last year, struggled with some injuries, and it was plagued with some inconsistency with, like, his shot selection. But, I mean, he's extremely talented, extremely athletic, and kind of fits this whole mold of versatile, multi-positional wings. You mentioned Ty Rogers is someone who he started on the U18 team. That could mean if he starts at the 4th Illinois, that they can go kind of smaller or more skillful with Coleman Hawkins at the 5. So they have a lot of really interesting pieces, a lot of interesting wrinkles. The key is going to be Sky Clark. I know people have really raved about him. He is a freshman 4-star point guard, right? So for every Tyrese Hunter who leads his team to an NCAA tournament berth and a surprisingly good finish, you know, there are a few guys who struggle. I mean, look at Rasul Diggins and Jalen Worley last year, who both, you know, really couldn't find their game after being top 50 recruits as well.
Well, with Sky, I think the one thing that's worth noting is, like, he was on a elite recruit trajectory and then dealt with injuries throughout his latter part of high school. And now that doesn't mean that he'll be healthy throughout his time at Illinois, right? Like, obviously, you know, that's a concern. And that's something that they have to deal with. And they don't necessarily have a true option to go to if Sky isn't there. It sounds like Ty Rogers is that guy, that they're really going to play him all over the court. But I think you and I would both agree that, like, it doesn't give me warm fuzzies, the idea that they're going to that they would potentially be forced to play Ty Rogers at the point.
Wait a second. We have to address this. Whenever you get a tweet or the coach soundbite that combo forward X is going to be their point guard, or center X is going to play some point guard, it just means that they can make a couple nice passes.
Correct.
Like last year, we had Andre Jackson is going to play some point guard for UConn. That never happened. This year, I've seen Oso Iguodaro is going to play some point guard for Marquette.
Oh, Jesus.
That is never – like, he may make a nice backdoor pass out of the high post, but that doesn't mean he's the point guard. It just means, like, he was on the court and
– Ty Rogers at least can, like, dribble. Ty Rogers can at least, like, dribble.
So can Andre Jackson and yes. Some of these guys. But so, whenever you claim these wings are going to be point guards.
Yes. I'm with you.
It's just not a thing.
I'm with you. So I think where I come down on this Illinois team, right, is this, like, super high variance. Right? Like, if you told, like you said, you could sell me on this team eventually being a top 10 team. But you could also, like, convince me pretty easily, like, this team doesn't make the NCAA tournament, right?
Right, because, like, Matthew Meyer has been pretty overrated. He had a down year last year.
He's coming off back surgery.
And then we have a lot of reliance on freshmen. We said Clark, who's coming off injury, and then Rogers and Epps are just unproven freshmen.
Shannon's coming off injury all of last year, in and out of the lineup. Dane Danger is in the rotation. He's never played basically college basketball.
As much as I like Coleman Hawkins, I mean, his skills are there. He hasn't matched the production yet.
Yeah, very inconsistent, right? Like this thing has the potential to not go very well. And look, I mean, I really like RJ Melendez. He made an impact when he was on the floor last year. I know a lot of people are talking about the breakout guy. I buy that. But, like, RJ Melendez played, like, 6 minutes a game last year. I want to pull that stat just so I actually have it. But it wasn't like Melendez was, like, consistently getting, like, good minutes and it was growing throughout the year. Like, there were games where RJ did not play in, like, February. So, you know, again, the variance here is huge, but the upside of this, like, long, positionless, skilled team with veterans, but a dynamic young point guard and a glue guy and a five-man and Coleman Hawkins just basically, like, who's their best player? Is their best player Coleman Hawkins? Yeah, RJ Melendez played 8.5 minutes a game last year.
No, their best player is Terrence Shannon.
Yeah, you're right. Yes, you're right.
But their second best player might be Coleman Hawkins.
Yeah. It's tricky. It really is. I'm excited to watch this team. Very excited to watch them. I know they're in Vegas in the event with Baylor, Virginia, and UCLA. And that should produce some really good matchups the second week of the season. Obviously, they have Syracuse in the ACC Big Ten. So this is going to be exciting. It's going to be a lot of fun. to kind of feel out this group. I think it's going to take time. I think a lot of it is on Clark, as you said, just to be consistent. I think I'm buying Shannon more than I am Meyer for this year. And I'm also curious to see what the breakdown winds up being at the five, because early on, you know, especially during the spring, it was a lot of like, oh my gosh, Dane's just so good. Like we don't need to take a center. Like we're okay. And they're like, oh, we're going to go positionless. And now it's like, oh no, Coleman Hawkins is the five. So do we get 10 minutes of Dane Danger? Is Dane Danger like Benjamin Bosman's Verdonk Redux? Is Dane Danger like 70% of Kofi Coburn? Like where on the scale of like barely useful to All-American is, which is basically what their bigs were last year, is Dane Danger sitting on? I would imagine closer to barely useful.
I bet he's going to be like a fine 15-minute a game guy.
Yeah. Would you feel, how much better would you feel about this, or how much worse would you feel about this team if you swapped out Dane Danger for Benjamin Bosman for Donk? I'm curious about this.
Like maybe one spot?
Yeah, it wouldn't matter.
It seems like South Carolina is infatuated with him, at least based on their offseason vibes, but.
I mean, when the rest of your roster is like Hayden Brown and Michi Johnson, then I'd be very infatuated with Benjamin Bosman-Verdonk. So.
I mean, Michi Johnson was a top 100 recruit who played a little at Ohio State. Benjamin Bosman-Verdonk was like on...
He was international, so you never know what he
duty. Yeah.
He played. He got some minutes. Anyway, Illinois is 40-1 on Bovada to win the national title. Kind of like that. Just like roll the dice. Good team, good coach. No, they haven't won in March, but I don't think that's an Underwood problem. Like he won in March.
That's variance.
Yeah, it's variance. And look, they drew the best number 8 seed. He lost to an 8 seed. He lost to the 9th ranked team in KenPom, and the 2nd ranked team in KenPom is 2 years the NCAA tournament. Just happened to be that was the first weekend both times.
I'll give him the Houston one, but the Loyola one, they were number 1 seed.
Oh no,
they
I know, were, but Loyola
they were
was
considered a favorite to win it all.
Loyola was a top 10 KenPom team. It's not like they lost to like a garbage opponent.
And Illinois was like a top 3 title favorite.
I know. I'm not excusing the loss. I'm just saying like that's brutal bracketing still. That's still brutal draw. I'm not just Homer and the Ramblers here.
And they were on the ropes against Chattanooga.
Oh, I know they were. That was an ugly game. Really ugly.
And that was not a bad draw. That was just a normal 13 seed.
Yes, that was correct. Correct. I agree with that.
All right. Illinois, I have them winning the Big Ten.
Yeah, I do too. I have them 15th nationally. You have them that as well. So great way to start with some variance there. Really, really started strong here. Wisconsin, Brad, ready to go there?
Yes.
Okay. So the Badgers, 25-8 a season ago. Big surprise. Started 15-2. After a while, you started to kind of realize the team is not that good, but they just found ways to win behind Johnny Davis, who was a super high usage guy, was really, really productive despite going through injuries and hurting his efficiency because of that. Just, you know, became one of the best players in college basketball. And that was something I don't think we could have anticipated in the preseason. Davis had a great freshman year. You saw the potential for the breakout, but I think we saw the breakout as like 13 points a game, not like top 10 pick. And now the Badgers need to figure out how to play without him and without Brad Davison in the backcourt, who, you know, for his ups and downs had a very nice year last year, like him or not. I mean, was a, you know, never turned the ball over, made threes, like good, like solid to good defender, like was a useful enough piece for this group. So you do return your front court with Tyler Wall and Stephen Crowell. And you bring back your freshman point guard, Chucky Hepburn, who had a very nice year as a freshman. Not the most dynamic player offensively, but a bulldog, really competes, can get downhill, can make tough shots. I think is in for a nice year ahead. But I think the looming thing with them, and we've said it pretty much every year, is like, do they have enough talent? And I think particularly on the wing and really in the backcourt outside of Hepburn, you really start to wonder, is there enough here to really, I mean, for one, to get to the NCAA tournament, and number two, obviously, to compete in the Big Ten. And I think that's where the question lies.
Because yeah, at this time last year, yeah, we thought Johnny Davis would have a nice breakout, average like 13, 14 points a game, but obviously still be in school. You know, probably saw him as a four-year player. Chucky Hepburn, we were kind of, freshman starting point guard, I don't know about this. Brad Davison, I think we were all kind of on the same page that he was much maligned, but, I mean, he didn't improve a ton throughout his 4 years, but he was like a good, solid second, third best player. And sometimes that gets taken for granted. I think we were kind of in on a Tyler Wall jump a little bit. But all those things.
Wall improved more than I think we expected, though. Wall to me is one of the most underrated players in college basketball.
I ranked him as a top 100 player for this upcoming year. But my point being, right, sure. we saw all those ingredients and we labeled that as an NIT team. And they ended up as a 3 seed. We look at these ingredients.
They were 37th in KenPom last year.
But
the 35th ranked team in KenPom went to the NIT. So
listen, you guys and your KenPom are just what would you do if there was no KenPom?
Like, I don't know.
It's like your North Star. I mean, the end of the day, they won a ton of games.
Yes,
we're talking about
not
a second because they tied for the Big Ten win.
I'm not taking anything away. I'm just saying, like, at the end of the day, like, it's not like this team was overwhelming with the pieces you just said. They just won. They found ways to win because they were experienced and had just enough talent and well coached. Continue.
I mean, winning's kind of important, some may say.
Well, agreed.
But yeah, we're looking at this team similarly to what we looked at last year's team, where it's like, oh yeah, I think Chucky Hepburn can make a jump. I like Tyler Wall's one of the top 80 players in the sport. Stephen Crowell was solid last year. I know that you're a big Klesmic guy. I think they were just one piece away on the wing, and it's easier said than done. There were not a lot of big shot making wings out there, but they could have really used one.
Yeah. They were too aggressive early in taking Kamari McGee from Green Bay. I'm not saying Kamari won't have a role on this team, but that was a reach. Like, taking a kid who averaged 11 points a game and shot under 40% from three just because he's kind of in the state and around as like a undersized combo is like a mistake in Wisconsin. And again, I know that last year they took Jacoby Neath. So, I mean, more power to you, Kamari McGee. That's better. We're on the right track here, but you need to do a little bit more to push yourself over the top. And I think that, I think Klesmit will help. I think Klesmit will be a starter. I'm trying to, like, think of a good – he's not Brevin Pritzel. Like, he's not as physical as Pritzel, but I think he's a little bit more, like, skill with the ball. But if they got, like, Brevin Pritzel production, I think you'd probably, like, sign for that. Like, I don't think you're getting Brad Davis in production out of Klesmit. I guess my struggle is, like, we went into last year saying we didn't know how well Johnny would be able to create shots. And I think we go into this year kind of with the same thing, or like, can Chucky create? And I don't want to just say, oh, well, Johnny did it, so Chucky will, because I think their games are very different. Like, I don't think of Chucky as that level of playmaker. And I think if he's not, it's going to be hard for this team to go to the NCAA tournament. And that's kind of where I'm going to come down on this Wisconsin team. They're not going to be far off, but I'm going to have them basically where I had them last year, like right in the like high 50s, low 60s range nationally.
Yeah, I have them 58th. I think that they have a few really strong pieces. They could easily make the tournament, even without like crazy Johnny Davis level leaps from people.
Yes.
I mean, even with Hepburn at the point of the attack, you have one of the best defensive guards in the country. Wall should be a very good defender with his athleticism and versatility.
They need one strong wing performance. Like Jordan Davis becoming like a 9 point per game, like 3-and-D wing, probably gets him into the NCAA tournament.
Yes. And the Big Ten is going to be very clumped in that, like, outside the top 25, but still in the tournament. So I think I have Wisconsin, even though 58th in the country, I think I have them 9th or 10th in the Big Ten itself.
Yeah, I have them 9th in the Big Ten, 55th nationally.
Yeah, I have them 10th in the Big Ten, 58th nationally.
Fair enough. Brings us to our third place team in last year's conference, which was the team that was most talented. There was such a frustrating watch drought last season. That's Purdue. Purdue, top 15 KenPom finish, had an embarrassment of riches. You had Jaden Ivey, top 5 pick. You had Zach Edey and Trevion Williams up front. You have Stefanovic. You had a senior point guard and Eric Hunter. And they were very good, but they never quite got to the point that I think most people had expected them to get to. There would always felt like they were missing that final gear. They struggled defensively. It seemed like the chemistry wasn't necessarily perfect. And so now this team, I think for better or worse, has a much clearer identity, right? I mean, last year's group, I think a lot of times when we watched them, Brad, we felt like you were arm wrestling between whose team it was. Was it Travion's team? Was it Edie's team? Was it Ivy's team? Ivy would kind of go missing for points of the game and then try to take over it. And it went well, went great sometimes, and it went poorly other times. You had like seen, you know, obviously in the St. Peter's loss, where Ivy just like at times just kind of threw his hands up and tried to make a play. But also at times against Ohio State at Mackey, I was at that game. He drilled a three to win it in the closing stages and was just awesome. And he traded buckets back and forth. I mean, the late game against Wisconsin and the game that they eventually lost on the banked in shot by Hepburn, that game was in Madison on March 1st. That, I mean, Ivy was unbelievable. No, they obviously don't have the replacement for that, but I do wonder if maybe you undervalue a little bit this Purdue team, because the role allocation at least should be much better, and they should be able to kind of build everything around arguably the most dominant singular force in the country in Zach Edey.
Well, I mean, what was really wrong with the role allocation last year?
I mean, Travion and Edey kind of butting heads a little bit.
But they never really played them together.
Right. Well, so it was less about the role allocation being off, and it was like the chemistry within the role allocation, if that makes sense. Like, it made sense to have Ivy plus shooters plus dominant big man on the floor at once. That, like, that's a logical roster construction. Yeah. But in practice, I think you'd agree, Brad, that like it felt like five individual people pedaling on their own instead of like one tandem bicycle, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I can get that, because I think that their perimeter especially made a lot of sense.
Yes.
Right? You have kind of a placeholder point guard who in theory can knock down some threes. You have Ivy as the go-to guy, the super athletic guy, but his defensive effort wasn't always there. And then you have Stefanovic as the three-point shooter. And I think that really works well. It's a little light on size, a little, you know, Ivy's a great athlete, but Stefanovic and Thompson Hunter, they were kind of smaller and more slight. I think Stefanovic might have been tall enough, but he didn't play with a ton of physicality, if a memory serves.
Right, and that hurt them defensively.
And then at that four spot, you have like a versatile glue guy four in Gillis. And then first, who I think eventually is going to be like a monster double-double guy who can shoot it a little bit. But as a freshman, he wasn't quite there. So I think they could have really used like a Vincent Edwards there.
Yeah.
A guy kind of like Mason Gillis, but could shoot it better and is more athletic and more kind of wingy.
So let's go through this team and the rotation, because I think that's the interesting thing, right? Like, obviously, Edie is going to play center, and I think you're going to get him up to 28, maybe 30 minutes a game.
Whoa. You sure?
I mean, I don't think they're going to play him 22 again, right?
I would have said like 25. I mean, 30 minutes a game is a lot for a center.
30 is a lot. I think they're going to try to get him like 28, though.
Because I mean, you have, we just mentioned, first is back, and then you have Trey Kaufman, who is a top 50 recruit who redshirted last year. And they're not the same player as the genuine, you know, the Purdue assembly line center, like your AJ Hammonds, Isaac Haas. I think the guy next in line after Zach Edey is William Berg. I'm not sure if he's going to be ready.
Yeah.
He's like a 7'2 freshman. But Kaufman and First, I mean, they were in the same class. They're both bigs. I think the plan must be to play those guys together at some point.
Right. Well, I guess so my thinking is, I guess where I was going with this is, how much are you going to play First and Edey together? And how much are you going to use like Gillis and then Kaufman Wren as well, who's more of like a true power forward, I guess. How much are you going to use like more traditional options? How much are you going to get an extra shooter on the floor, right? So if you're Purdue, can you get Brandon Newman on the floor with Morton and Jenkins, Gillis at the four, and then space it better around Edey? Or do you need Furst on the floor because he's one of your best players?
See, I haven't really thought about their front court because I think that that's their strength.
I agree, it's their strength. I'm just wondering.
I think no matter how you align these four guys in the front court, I don't think that's an issue at all.
Well, I just think there's a fundamentally different looking outcome if Mason Gillis is your four versus Caleb Furst is your four. Right?
I mean, I guess it would be matchup dependent because Furst gives you more size and some more rebounding.
Right.
And Gillis gives you a little more versatility.
Agreed. The point guard question, though, I think is probably where you spent most of your time.
Absolutely. That's issue number one. Because we have a guy in Ethan Morton who's like a glue guy wing. We have a scoring guard in David Jenkins.
Definitely not a point guard.
No way. Definitely had a down year last year.
Yes. It's gotten worse every year, really.
Yeah. Since South Dakota State.
Yeah. He peaked in Brookings.
And then we have a guy in Brandon Newman who showed flashes once upon a time, but is quite a while away from being a consistent starting level player.
Any of the freshman guards, Fletcher Lawyer and Braden Smith?
None of which are top 100. I think Lawyer might be like 90-something in the composite.
Yeah.
But these are not ranked in an area where they would be ready to play immediately normally.
So I think at the end of the day, right, like, a decent comparison for this group might be the, and this sounds kind of dumb, but like the Jihad Proctor Purdue team.
Which wasn't very good.
Correct. Well, top 25 KenPom finish.
They were really on the bubblest of all bubbles.
Yeah, they were 24th in KenPom, but they went 16-15 overall because they overscheduled in the non-con. Played Texas, Marquette, Florida State, VCU, and Butler.
I mean, we'll talk about overscheduling in a few minutes, but
yeah,
I stand corrected because 16-15, you're not making the NCAA tournament.
Correct. They would. They had the Shaka Smart, Archie Miller rule in play there.
And they had the Big Ten tournament still to play, but yeah. I mean, what are they going to do?
I'm with you.
So that team did not pass the top 25 eye test.
No, agreed.
With like Matt Harms and Eric Hunter as their best player. Right.
But I do think Edey will be a better. I mean, Travion Williams was the best. Was still kind of the best player on that team, Brad.
Is that right?
He was their highest usage guy.
I don't remember that year.
Is that year
down to the detail?
Yeah.
I remember. Wasn't it like a last game against Rutgers and didn't Rutgers win on a buzzer beater?
They lost. Yeah, they lost to Rutgers at home at Mackey. Apparently on a buzzer, seemingly on a buzzer beater based on the game flow.
I remember some stuff and not others.
Anyway, I think the thing for me is this, right? Purdue is going to be able to score reliably every time Zach Edey touches the ball. You can double team him, you can triple team him, you can do whatever you want. Zach Edey, when he catches the ball, is going to score most of the time, right?
Yeah.
The question is, can they do enough to make sure he's getting consistent touches? And number one, that's point guard play. And number two, that's making sure you don't have spacing on the floor. And I think they probably have enough there to do that and become a safe NCAA tournament team, right? I have them 34th nationally, which I think would be like a fine year for them. 35th nationally is where I have them. Sorry, excuse me. I wouldn't be surprised if they wound up a top 25 team, like you said. I wouldn't be stunned if this team won the league, right? They've got the most dominant force on the interior.
Yeah, if this perimeter works and this point guard experiment works. I mean, they could be awesome. They could be top 10 good.
Yep. Where do you have them nationally, though, Brad?
I believe, geez. I have them 36th.
All right. Very good. Brings us to our fourth place team from a season ago, Iowa, who finished 12-8 in the league, finished with the highest KenPom in the league, won the Big Ten tournament, everything going up Hawkeyes, and then all of a sudden, the Richmond Spiders come in and pounce and knock them off of the first round. Kind of feels like if that was these last 2 years with National Player of the Year level guys and Keegan Murray and Luka Garza were not enough to get over the hump and like win in the NCAA tournament. It just does not feel like it's ever going to make a deep run under Fran. But the NCAA tournament is an exceedingly fickle thing, and we can't ignore the fact that Fran McCaffrey has now put together three straight top 25 finishes and two straight top 15 finishes at Iowa. Not like the easiest job in the world. So new look, obviously losing Keegan, who is so good, but his brother Chris is back. And some of the guys that really contributed to this team last year as young players, Tony Perkins, Pat McCaffrey, Peyton Sanford, those guys all back. And I think form a really interesting nucleus around a guy in Chris Murray, who is really productive, who I think has a chance to be a first round pick. Like I would bet money actually right now that Chris Murray this time next year is a first round pick, like in the 20s. I don't think he's going to have a 22 point per game season the way that his brother did this past year. But if he averaged 17 or 18 and was in the mix, you know, in the mix to be a Big Ten player of the year, would I be stunned by that? No, I think he's that good. I mean, he's a little more awkward, not quite as smooth, not quite the shooter. But they got the ball to him in a lot of unique spots last year, and he was really dangerous when they did that. So I know they swung big at centers in the portal, couldn't quite get one. Swung big at some names, too, like swung big at Keon Brooks, didn't really go anywhere. Wound up going portal free for this season, didn't take a transfer. But I think they probably have enough depth, maybe a little bit lacking. But we've seen in the past, Brad, I mean, the player development at Iowa has been pretty good. And the guys that they've been able to bring in and go, you know, go from very small roles as freshmen into, you know, producers as sophomores has been very consistent and very solid. You think about guys like, you know, Tony Perkins, who didn't really play as a freshman, becomes a really nice piece as a sophomore. Pat McCaffrey, another good example of that, has become into come into his own as a nice player. Fran has been able to kind of recruit these mid plus guys, develop them into players over time instead of having to run them off. And I think that's a really valuable thing, and that's something that we can look at when we say, oh, can maybe Aaron Ulis give you a jump? Can Josh Ogundele become like a playable backup center? I think those things you could sort of lean on a little bit because of Fran's track record there.
Well, it is interesting because in terms of their talent level, yeah, they certainly have NCAA tournament level talent. I have them pretty far away from the bubble, like pretty solidly in.
Oh, but okay. The
thing with the portal is there is always the siren song of being able to upgrade. Like, there's always that fifth-year senior around the corner who could push a starter, provide some depth, maybe even get in the starting lineup and improve your team.
That's basically what they did with Robacho last year.
Yeah. And you look at this team, and they could have used – point guard or a two guard or another veteran in there. We'll see what Aaron Ulis looks like. I think he played a little more than I had remembered looking back at it. Looks like he'll be the starting point guard, and it seems like...
I actually have Perkins.
Oh, yeah, you have Perkins and Sanford starting?
Yeah, which is not the most athletic two-spot with Sanford or McCaffrey, but... I mean, Tony Perkins, his final, down the stretch was really good for Iowa.
Seems like that there's some buzz surrounding around Desante Bowen, too.
Good recruit.
Yeah, kind of similar to, like, the Jaden Pierre, where, like, three-star point guard, everyone's saying he's going to be really good. Like, I guess we'll see what it looks like, but I guess they felt so comfortable with him that they didn't need to add a transfer in the backcourt. And just from, you know, you kind of started with Iowa on their kind of recent trajectory. It is funny because after they lost to Oregon, I remember saying to myself, like, wow, it must like really suck to be an Iowa fan. Like, you just had Luca Garza and Joe Wieskamp. And, like, how are you ever going to get back to this? Like, you guys had such great years. You couldn't win in the tournament. Like, this has got to be, like, a crushing missed opportunity between the canceled tournament and then the second round loss to Oregon. And then Keegan Murray comes out of nowhere. And I remember thinking back on my original thought and being like, I thought I was done. And now they got Keegan Murray. Now they're going to make a deep run in the NCAA tournament.
They might go to a Final Four. I thought they were going to the Final Four.
before I saw the bracket, I thought that they were going to go pretty far.
But I saw the bracket and I thought they were going to go really far.
That's because you have no respect
for the Providence Friars.
For the Friars. But, I mean, Richmond was like a dream matchup, right? Like, they're not athletic. They're not that talented.
No, there was nothing about that, like, scared me.
The only matchup that I gave less thought to being, like, scary was the UCLA-Akron one. And Akron gave UCLA a game, too.
Hell of a game.
I mean, that was stunning when Richmond beat Iowa. It was pretty hilarious. I mean, a Kansas fan put together a compilation of all the basketball analysts from ESPN and, you know, Fox and wherever, of them doing their mock bracket and them saying that Iowa was going to beat Kansas. It was like 15 of them all said Iowa was going to beat Kansas. And the funny thing was all those teams, or all those people had South Dakota State being Providence. But anyway, back to Iowa. Yeah. I have Chris Murray as like a top 15 player in the sport.
I think Perkins is really going to break out too.
Yeah, he was on our breakout list that we did a couple months ago as well. Sanford can really shoot it. McCaffrey could take a little jump as well. Aaron Ulis has got to be the key because starting or not, he's definitely gonna play a ton, and he's like the leading candidate to take this kind of Iowa out of nowhere leap that we've seen over the past few years.
I have Iowa 29th nationally, 4th in the Big Ten. Showing Fran a little love, buying the Perkins jump, buying Pat McCaffrey, buying the offense. They're really hard to guard.
Their defense should be okay too, right?
They're long and athletic. I mean, I don't know that their defense wasn't. I mean, Keegan was really valuable their defense last year. I think they'll miss that, like the rim protection.
I don't look at this roster though and say like Syracuse 2022.
No, it's not a turnstile. I agree with that.
Yeah.
What do you have nationally, Brad?
34.
Okay.
Cool. That's 5th in the Big Ten.
We got to get some differential here, man. Let's start dividing it up.
I thought I had done a good job of avoiding groupthink in my rankings, but maybe I didn't.
I polluted you. That's what
maybe
it is.
We're all infected.
Yeah. All right. Next up, we have Ohio State, 12-8 in the Big Ten last year, 20 wins. Kind of went out very quietly. 4 or 5 losses to close the regular season and conference tournament. Beat Loyola Chicago in a game that I don't think either team really deserved to win, given how poorly it was played, and then lost to Villanova, which means that EJ Liddell's storied career in Columbus goes without a second weekend in the NCAA tournament.
Malachi
Branham, surprise one and done, broke out throughout the season, was a really nice piece for them. They will miss him. They also lose Jamari Wheeler and Misha Johnson, who played a lot in the backcourt. Not necessarily were studs by any means, but 8 minutes were productive players. Definitely a different looking team, but I think a similar kind of narrative to what we've had in the past couple of years with Ohio State, which is very, very deep roster. Virtually everyone was a well-regarded recruit. I think the one thing that this year's team maybe lacks that the last few have had is star power. Unless one of these freshmen, like a Bryce Sensabaugh, really, really balls out, I don't know that there's a guy in this group that I'm saying, okay, that guy's going to be in the, you know, top – I don't know that there's a top 40 player on this team nationally. I don't know that there's a first-team all-Big Ten guy on this team. But go through, I would take every one of these players, right? I would – Isaac Likely could be on my team any day. Sean McNeil is a really good shooter from West Virginia. Justice Suing is a great defensive player who can also kind of initiate a little bit offensively, can play through with the elbows. He's going to have to jump offensively, I think. They've got a big man, Zed Key, who's really, really solid. They've got these freshmen like Sensabaugh and Bruce Thornton, Roddy Gale. All these guys were very well regarded. So, again, this is a team that I think is pretty high floor. Not sure where the ceiling is. I worry about their shooting, right? You look at this group and you say, okay, like Ice Likely, not a big shooter. Holden, not a big shooter. Suing, not a big shooter. Zed Key's not a spacer, right? Like one of these freshmen better be able to make shots. Otherwise, Sean McNeil's out there on an island.
So the only player who I put in my top 100 for next year was Zed Key. I think he could have a breakout. I like, you know, those kind of guys who used to be power forwards and other centers, like the DeJuan Blair. They're physical, they can score inside, they have a little shooting touch, and they're just super productive. I think Key, given the starting role, could have a nice year. Suing's the key because, you know, he was a super productive player when healthy. Missed basically all of last year, but when healthy, he's a 10-12 point per game guy, and I mean, those guys do not grow on trees. Transfer backcourt has me worried, and there's kind of the overall youth that they're relying on. You mentioned Thornton and Sensabaugh.
I mean, they're going to start. They might theoretically start four seniors and Key. I don't know if that's youth.
But all the buzz is Thornton and Sensabaugh.
That's true.
And those are senior transfers. You know, huh? Like Likely and McNeil and Holden. I mean, they're transfers. You know, these aren't the seniors of old that have been on the team for 4 years. You know. This isn't a 2015 senior laden team.
The big thing is they need, and we said last year, like they needed Branham to step up and help with Dwayne Washington's departure, and it worked out. And I don't know how realistic it is to expect Thornton and or Sensabaugh to do kind of a similar thing and have that like surprise one and done year. It really, you know, catapults them. If I love the options. I think Holtman's a very solid coach. And I think it's enough where, you know, I feel very good that this is a tournament team. But again, like, when I compare them to the top 25 clubs, I don't think they necessarily compare favorably, particularly compared to, like, you know, the top 20. Right? If you wanted to toss them at, you know, 22, 24, I wouldn't fight you on it. I think I have them at 32, so it's not like I'm, you know, drastically different. But, you know, I think when you start to compare this team to the upper echelon in college basketball, it's missing something.
I was missing talent because all these seniors like Likely and McNeil and Holden, I mean, these weren't top echelon transfers.
Well, I mean, right. Isaac Likely is a great third best player.
Likes Likely better than me.
Sean McNeil's a really good third or fourth best player. Justice Suing was a great third best player. Zed Key's been a good third best player, right? I mean, the whole team is third best players.
And, you know, even with the Malachi Branham breakout last year, I think they still kind of underachieved based on expectations.
I think that's probably right. But they didn't have Suing. That was
okay, yeah, okay.
And their point guard play was really suspect.
And we may have still thought Seth Towns was going to give us something.
No, we didn't. I mean, you might have, but
I don't remember if I did or not.
You can't do the week.
I know this year I did not think that. And now that he's stepped away, I mean, no one can mentioned that he used to be the player of the year at Harvard.
Yeah, I think the hope for this team being like considerably better than last year would be that their point guard play improves drastically from like the defensive-minded Wheeler and Michi combo.
Going from that to a defensive-minded Likely and...
Or Bruce Thornton.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Okay, we'll see. I have them third in the Big Ten, 29th overall.
Fifth in the Big Ten, 32nd overall, which brings us to Rutgers. It's wild that, like, the teams that a lot of people are picking to win the league this year, Michigan and Indiana, like, we still have to get to them in the middle Pittman pack. Rutgers, 12-8 in the league last year, 18-14 overall, a strong Big Ten season, bailed out a disastrous non-conference that featured a loss to DePaul, a loss to UMass, a loss to Lafayette, 323 in KenPom.
Scare versus Lehigh, yeah. Right?
First week of the season, overtime against Lehigh, 302. That weekend, 48-35 win over Merrimack. That's horrendous. You know, play with the food a little bit. I mean, they sunk the metrics. I mean, their metrics after they only beat Maine, they only beat Maine by 16. Maine was 354. And so heading into the new year, they were 105th in KenPom. And it really took them until February to get back into the top 100. They kind of flipped in and out, but they were 104 heading into a Michigan State home game. They blew Michigan State out, and that kind of propelled them into the NCAA tournament picture. And despite a first-round Big Ten tournament loss, got in. I think we're a very good basketball team. Obviously, lost to Notre Dame in that awesome two-overtime game that I think people forget about in the first four. But this was a good team. Steve Pikel did a good job. They navigated some stuff. Got better as the season went on. Proved that, like, the 2 years of success were not a fluke. This thing is a solid program. But you lose Ron Harper. You lose Geo Baker. That's a ton of shot creation and production. Bring back Mulcahy. Bring back Caleb McConnell. And bring back Cliff Omori, who is a very talented kid. Incredible physical specimen on the interior. I think the question with them is, like, how are they going to score consistently? Because McConnell is certainly not a guy who's going to take over a ball game offensively. I don't think Omori is the guy that you're feeding on the block 20 times a game. And Mulcahy really took off down the stretch offensively. But still, I still don't think it's wired to be like a first scoring option. There's a lot riding on Cam Spencer, the transfer from Loyola, Maryland.
I mean, this team could have, like, an unbelievable defense. I mean, 2 through 5, if they have McConnell and Mulcahy on the wing, and then either Mawat Mag or Andre Hyatt at the 4, and then Omori at the 5, I mean, that's going to be a killer defense. And we'll see if, you know, having this score first point guard in Cam Spencer, if that adds enough offense.
It's a big jump, right? I mean, he can score. He can really, really, really score. But he's not a great defender. And it'll be interesting. I mean, they're not the same player, but I think there are some comparisons actually to be made between Cam Spencer and Peter Kiss, who went to Rutgers and just, like, couldn't really get on the floor because, you know, Pikel wanted the defensive mind. You know, they're going to need to kind of live with the ebbs and the flows of Cam Spencer. I think he's a better player, but, like, they're going to need to live with the ups and the downs of him taking bad shots, making poor decisions defensively. They're not, like, this team is not going to have the luxury of saying, like, okay, like, we're going to put Jalen Miller in and, like, hound everyone defensively, right? Like, they'd have to win games 44-40. I sense that I'm daring Steve Pikel to do something. Steve, if you're listening, please do not try to win games 44-40. Please.
I mean, if they played Mulcahy at the 1 and Hyatt at the 3, I mean, that would be a huge...
Who's playing the 4 in that lineup? Reber?
Mag.
You can play Reber, too. You can play big. Two bigs.
They could put some, like, really athletic, really killer defensive lineups out there.
Yeah.
It's just all going to come down to scoring. I mean... Caleb McConnell is considered one of the best defenders in the country, especially on the perimeter. Mag's a great athlete. Hyatt's a good athlete. Mulcahy has great size.
Yep.
Omori is a beast on the interior for those one-handed dunks.
He's a beast. How much do you think his offensive game can grow, though? I'm curious your thoughts there.
I have no idea. I mean, his whole thing was around the rim.
Right.
And, I mean, if they're not going to give him more touches this year, I mean, who are the touches going to go to?
I think he's going to get the touches, but, like, I still don't think his game, like, lends itself in the same way. He's not like a super soft touch guy.
We will see this year. I mean,
we will.
There is certainly an opportunity for one of these bench guys to come in, and if they can provide a spark, you know, if they can earn some time. A lot of these guys have been around a couple of years. You know, you mentioned Reber, Hyatt. This is Jalen Miller's second or third year, I believe, as
second
well.
Second year, yep.
Palmquist as a stretch four is – got a little cup of coffee once upon a time.
And this is where the fact that Rutgers, for the most part, has not landed a lot of, like, instant impact freshmen hurts them, right? Like, their freshman class this year is Antone Woodfolk, Derek Simpson, and Antonio Chol. I think we'd be surprised if any of them really contribute, right? So you're relying on these, like, kind of internal development. That's okay, but... it does kind of hurt the talent level a little bit. If this team had Roddy Gale coming off the bench, I think we'd feel a lot better about them.
Like Rodney Rice or like some of these other.
Like Roddy Gale might not play at Ohio State, you know?
Yeah, this team is just begging for one of these bench guys to just come in, take the reins, and And
we kind of said that last year, and they never did. But at least they had Geo and Harper.
Yeah. Yeah, we were talking earlier, a few podcasts ago, about, you know, like the 2015 team versus the 2022.
Yeah.
Way to build your offseason. This is kind of like 2017-ish.
Yeah, one quarterback, like one transfer
to plug the hole. But then there are also a lot of guys that were buried on the bench last year who have stuck around, and a couple of these guys will play. I think Reber, Hyatt, and Miller will probably all play.
And Mag,
they need those guys to make a jump.
I have Rutgers 8th in the Big Ten, 52nd nationally.
We are very, very in lockstep here. I have them 53rd nationally and 8th in the Big Ten.
Alrighty. On to our next
issue, by the way, that we're so close.
I know, it's frightening. People should stop caring what we have to say on this one, because
we need a different way to think about rankings. That's I think the reason why there's so much groupthink is that everyone's thinking about these teams the same way. Like, we're all valuing the transfers the same, valuing the returners the same, and the freshmen. Yeah. You know, we're all working with the same formula, with a little tweaks here and there.
Keep it moving to Michigan. 19 and 15 last year, kind of felt like everything went wrong, and they still went to the Sweet 16. Basically, the whole supporting cast outside of Hunter Dickinson is gone. Devontae Jones, Diabate, Frankie Collins, Eli Brooks, Caleb Houston, Brandon Johns, all those guys move on. You bring back Terrence Williams and Kobe Bufkin, who did get some minutes. Williams was a steady contributor at the 3 and the 4. He'll be a steady contributor this year once again, but this is a group that's going to rely on a grad transfer in Jalen Llewellyn at point guard. They're going to rely on a freshman in Jet Howard on the wing. And they're going to need someone else to step up, one other guy, whether that's maybe two, whether that's Kobe Bufkin, who was a good recruit, Joey Baker, Youssef Kazat, who's the Lebanese kid who enrolled this fall. It's going to be tricky kind of figuring out exactly where it works out. Another team where the talent floor is very, very high. I mean, your 13th man is Isaiah Barnes, who was a top 150-ish recruit, or Jace Howard, who is a coach kid and gave some minutes last year. So they're not, they're in good shape from that perspective, but it's all about optimizing around Dickinson. And I guess the hope would be that, guys like Jet Howard and Llewellyn are upgrades over Caleb Houston and Devontae Jones. And then you just kind of plug in a 2 and a 4 there somewhere. But, this could go either way. I mean, they have one of the best players in the sport. I mean, I don't want to undersell it. They have a coach that before last year, everyone considered the next coming of God, Juwan Howard. I wouldn't argue with you if you picked the team to win the league.
They have that upside. I think the team is built pretty well around Dickinson. Llewellyn can score. Williams played with him in AAU, and he should be better optimized at the four.
Not a great shooter, though.
Played a lot of three previously. I think he'll improve in that area. Maybe not to be a stretch four, per se, but I think he'll be fine.
He's a true power forward.
Yeah, I think he's going to be good this year. Great, great recruit. They were kind of pigeonholing him. I think now the four is his, and I think he'll have this opportunity. It's tough that Joey Baker, it felt like Michigan really needed him so bad. And now it doesn't even look like he's going to start. Even before a game is played. But think he'll probably play, hit some threes. This team's upside is basically based on how you view Jet Howard, though, right? I mean, some people have him as a one and done. If he's that good, because he wouldn't be a Caleb Houston one and done, or a Giabate one and done, where that's based on their potential and kind of the preseason thought. If he's going to be a one and done, that's going to be more performance based. And that would add a major spark to their backcourt that's needed.
Yeah, I'm excited about him. He played really well in the award circuit this spring. I think the big thing for me that I'll like him, he's not going to be quite the shooter Caleb Houston is, but he can really make shots. And I think the thing that's exciting about him is I think he's going to bring an edge and a toughness that Caleb Houston didn't. And I think that's exciting. I think you could see lineups where you take Williams off the floor, you plug in Joey Baker, and then you actually have that spacing, right? You have Howard, you have Baker, Dickinson is not a shooter per se, but like can operate a little bit on the perimeter, you know, with the catch and dribble and dribble handoff, the occasional pop three. Like, I think their offense could be pretty hard to guard if you're putting spacing around Dickinson and he's allowed to operate kind of from everywhere. He's a dominant force. I think he got killed last year early in the season because they struggled, and I think he was the face of it. Like, oh wow, they lost everyone. Dickinson's the guy now, and now they can't win. But Dickinson had an unbelievable year. He was really, really productive. He won them games time and time again. He was the least of Michigan's worries last year and was a huge reason they were even able to make the NCAA tournament. And I think that because there's so many of these bigs, he's almost gotten overlooked a tiny bit, and he's every bit the player that all these other guys are.
Well, because it seems consensus that he's behind Tshiebwe, Timme, and Bacot at least. I personally like Dickinson more than Bacot, but I'm the only person I've ever seen have that. And then like right behind them you have Edie and Sanogo. So you know there are so many bigs, and people see him more as a second tier big, even though he's like a consensus top 10 player in the country.
Well, Bovada's buying Michigan. Bovada has Michigan at 30-1 nationally. Or 31 to win it all, excuse me. That's the highest in the Big Ten. They're the best odds in the Big Ten. So they are the theoretical favorites to win a national title. And the favorites in the Big Ten, according to the betting markets. So I don't know.
Are they also the favorite to win the Big Ten, according to Bovada? Or does Bovada only have championship odds?
Only championship odds right now. They are... I mean, I have them 24th nationally. Third in the Big Ten.
I'm 30th and 4th. Yeah, we need breakouts from Bufkin and Williams. We need Howard to be good. We need Baker to finally be productive. I think Reed and Big Daniel will both be in the rotation. They should be solid. And the X factor is Mr. Youssef
Kayat. That is the Spartans, which brings us across the state to Michigan State, who had a better seed in the NCAA tournament than Michigan, despite the fact that they finished 15 spots below them in KenPom. 23-13, lost to Duke in the second round, played a great NCAA tournament game against the Blue Devils, really fell off a cliff down the stretch, right? Started 17-4, were rolling in the Big Ten, had only most of her losses were close games. They lost by one to Illinois on a missed free throw. They lost by two to Northwestern on a missed free throw. They played Baylor and Kansas. Those are the other two losses. They built quite a resume and then kind of fell off a cliff. Awkward team, right? I mean, point guard questions with Hogard and Walker splitting the bill. Christie was never himself or never the recruit he was promised to be, I guess would be the point there. Bingham started strong and finished pretty poorly. He just had a lot of good players, not a lot of great players. And Tom Izzo, and we've talked about this a lot on the podcast, this offseason, Tom Izzo was not aggressive in the portal. Tom Izzo comes into this year with three scholarships open and originally was planning on redshirting the 10th man, which is Carson Cooper, a late stock riser who really came out of nowhere to sign with Michigan State. Now it sounds like he's going to play, at least in some form, for this Michigan State team. But they've got 10 total bodies. One of them, Jaden Akins, is hurt right now. Sounds like he'll be ready for the regular season. But obviously there's no guarantees there. And they're building this thing with freshmen and with proven guys that have been in the program. Hogard and Walker back for another year. Malik Hall back for another year. Joey Hauser another year. You got potential breakout guys in Akins and Brooks. And then they're going to really rely on their freshman big man, Jackson Kohler, who's really, really skilled, probably can't jump over a textbook. Looks like Matt McQuaid with a beer belly, but is a guy that they're going to rely on as a scoring punch at the five. And, if this were 2010, you'd look at this roster and say, wow, this is great. You know, they got guys coming in. You got these breakout candidates. You got these proven production. But nowadays, you'd feel a lot better about this Michigan State team if they had a grad transfer five and a, you know, plug and play wing that doesn't force Jaden Akins to be, you know, a fringe All Big Ten guy this year.
So I had Michigan State like right next to Purdue, like in the high 30s. And then I saw their schedule. And there were six games on their schedule. Five or six, I don't remember exactly, but where they were playing teams that I have ranked higher than they are. Right? Like they're playing Villanova, they're in PK 80. I think they have
85.
Or PK 85. And they had the right some combination of Alabama, UConn, and Florida.
Yep.
They have Gonzaga. They have Duke too, right? Or no?
Hold on.
They have a bunch of really good teams. And the way I'm seeing it, right, if they have six games in their non-con that, based on rankings, I have them losing. So the best they're going to do in the non-con, if like all goes to plan, would be 5-6. And now maybe they pick off one or two and they go 6-5. Well, if they go 6-5 and then they go 10-10 in the Big Ten, they're not making the tournament. Even if they go 11-9, they're not making the tournament. Especially if this is a more down Big Ten. I think that there's still a lot of really good teams, and maybe that'll afford them plenty of Q1 and Q2 or whatever resume stuff. But I don't think that there's going to be the opportunities to get like the real headline-grabbing wins of beating like a top five or top 10 team. I mean, we have Illinois winning the league, and we both have them at 15. Yep. So I think that super strong non-con, kind of like what we alluded to with the 2020 Purdue team. We'll never know because the tournament got canceled. But that kind of over-scheduling, I think, has put Michigan State into a precarious position. Plus, lack of depth, guys hurt, lack of a true best player. I mean, we're going to say probably any one of these four returning starters could be their best player. But, like, nothing proven, like, you know, I mean, even I have them in my depth chart next to Kansas, who has Kevin McCullough and Jalen Wilson. They don't have any guys on paper close to that level of player, you know.
So to the schedule, I'll read out the gauntlet here. So they play Northern Arizona on opening night. They'll win that game. Then they go Gonzaga in San Diego, Kentucky in Indianapolis, Villanova at home, in East Lansing. Then you fly to Portland the next week. You play Alabama, then UConn or Oregon. And then theoretically, if you lost both your first two games, you're probably going to get, Portland or Portland State. I forget whoever's on the other side of the bracket. Whichever one's on their side of the bracket, they play that team. But maybe you win one of those games, you wind up with a high major in that spot. And then you come home, you play Notre Dame in South Bend. You know, top 50-ish team. And then, this is probably not that unmanageable, but they come home from that, and that weekend they open Big Ten play with Northwestern in East Lansing. Northwestern beat Michigan State in East Lansing last year without Pete Nance. And then they go road to Penn State. I mean, that is brutal. Brutal. Even their bye game, their remaining bye games, they played Buffalo, good program, Oakland, who has Rocket Watts, Brown, okay, they'll probably beat Brown. They'll probably beat all of these bye games, but like, holy cow.
I mean, no one expects to lose a bye game.
That's true. Izzo's record is good in those, though. Izzo's not a guy who usually loses these bye games.
Izzo was never a guy who lost in the first round of the NCAA tournament.
That's true.
And then it was always lost his touch, and then, oh, now he's back.
Just the January, February, pandemic. March, Izzo.
Yep.
Or January, February is up like that. Anyway, I'm buying the Akins thing. I would have bet like significant money that Tom Izzo would say the exact quote that he said either yesterday or today when he said that the way that Tyson Walker has looked this fall is a reminder of why players should sit out a year when they transfer. That was a stone cold lock that he was going to say that.
Oh, wait. Tyson Walker never sat out.
That's what he said. He's saying the way Tyson Walker is playing is right now, the way he looks now after a year, is why transfers should have to sit out, because Tyson Walker looks so good now. I know. I didn't say it's a logical argument. That doesn't
make sense. He looks so good after getting a year of playing for us that it really proves that he should have not played for us last year.
Who leads Michigan State in scoring, in your mind?
Tyson Walker. But I think you can make a case for probably Walker, Malik Hall, or Hauser.
Yep, I agree with that. Or maybe Hogard.
Yeah.
Or Aiken.
Maybe Kohler.
Yeah, I don't think if Jackson Kohler leads the team in scoring, that's probably an issue.
I mean, this is a team where you could get five guys averaging like 10 points a game.
Yeah. It's going to be valid. I mean, that's what they were last year.
And they had one NBA player, Max Christie, and I think Gabe Brown got pretty close to the NBA. So.
Yep. I've got Michigan State 36th nationally, but I don't think they're a lock for the tournament because of, like you said, the schedule that puts them in precarious positions to be over 500.
Yeah, I had them 37th, but I moved them 48, which just represents the first team out of the tournament.
Fair enough. All right. Next up, we have the Indiana Hoosiers, a trendy pick to win the Big Ten this year. Rousing run in the conference tournament made a lot of people forget that this Indiana team was really bubbly for most of last year, and really probably a little bit underwhelming, considering the excitement about the Mike Woodson era. They didn't magically become efficient on offense. They didn't magically fix a lot of the problems that they've had, but they found a way late. They got into the tournament. They played in the first four, and they won in the first four and got a crack at St. Mary's. They lost. That was probably a little bit disappointing, but I think mission accomplished in year one under Mike Woodson. And now an opportunity with one of the better players in the sport in Jackson Davis and with experience around him to really, really take off. I don't know that I'm buying that they're going to win this league, but I'm going to have them in that mix. And if you are buying it, it has to be because you're buying Xavier Johnson, right? XJ last year in the final 10 games of last season averaged 16.5 points, 6.5 assists, shot 46% from three, had a 2-to-1 assist to turnover ratio. And most importantly, he was kind of the heart and soul. He was so energetic. He was awesome to watch in those Big Ten tournament games. I mean, just such energy and poise. Played like a high-level point guard, an all-Big Ten-level point guard. Do we get that Xavier Johnson, or do we get the Xavier Johnson that makes poor decisions, that shoots shoots poorly, that turns the ball over, that's energy level really fluctuates? If we get that Xavier Johnson, this team's going to be on the bubble again. And if we get the Xavier Johnson that we saw down the stretch, this team might win the Big Ten.
I have them 18.
Okay.
So I am buying them. I think Xavier Johnson will be very good. I have him as a top 100 player in the country. Kopp and Thompson are solid. I think they're both like their fifth year. Should both be close to, if not double-figure scores. Trayce Jackson-Davis is one of the best players in the country. So that foursome right there, all coming back from the year prior, I think that warrants them being ranked in the top 25. Defense should be pretty good, if not very good. So I think where you can start to argue them as a championship contender is how you feel about some of these candidates at the two-guard spot, whether it's Jalen Hood-Schifino, who is, if not a five-star, very close to it. Tamar Bates, who I think was a top 30 recruit last year, showed some flashes. You know, got a few minutes last year, didn't play a ton. And then if they go bigger, maybe they move Kopp up and they start Jordan Geronimo, who played really well down the stretch, who's like a super athletic energy combo forward. And then there's Trey Galloway, who doesn't seem to ever play that well, but always seems to be in the mix.
He's crafty. He's crafty, man. I don't mind his him taking minutes away from Miller Kopp because he contributes in other ways than just making shots.
But so they need some shooting at least, and they need some nice production from that two guard spot if they're going to be a Big Ten champion or a Big Ten contender. Having them 18th, I think that they'll be that they'll get solid contribution from their bench from that two spot, and Trayce Jackson-Davis will be one of the best players in the country.
I have them 20th. Let me confirm that. Yeah, 20th nationally. My deal with them is this, right? Like, I don't see the like top 10 to 12 nationally that I've seen from a few people. Like, I think Andy Katz had them like 9th. Like, come on. This is largely the same team that was, a hair from missing the NCAA tournament. And they're a top 10 team because Jalen Hood-Schifino comes in and averages 9 points a game. Like, come on. They're not like majorly reshaping how they play, right? At the end of the day, it's still Trayce and Race, and Xavier Johnson and ball screens. However everyone else fits into that is great. But Tamar, like, I'm not convinced by the idea that, like, Tamar Bates is going to come in and average, 12 points a game next year or this coming year. Or the fact that, you're going to get a huge year from Hood-Schifino. Or the fact that having a backup center in Malik Reno is a huge gap between Michael Durr. I mean, I think Malik Reno has a huge future ahead of him. But, like, it's backup center minutes for a center who plays all the freaking time. Like, Trayce is great at staying on the floor.
Mike Woodson does a full line change where, like, NBA style, where he has a whole second unit on the court at times. He did that in the NCAA tournament.
Well, I think that that's one of the reasons that they were pretty good in the conference tournament was that they didn't do that because it was desperation time. It was like, wow, like, we're not like giving away 10 points every three minutes here.
That is a wild move to college basketball with all the media timeouts to play none of your top five players at once.
It's insane. I think they'll be good. I just don't think they'll be great.
Do you think that they have the same upside as like a Purdue or a Michigan, where like you could see the scenario where Purdue or Michigan things click and they're awesome, but you could also see they're lower median outcome than Indiana? Do you see it the same way?
I think of Indiana having a slightly lower ceiling and a higher floor.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm open to the ceiling. I'm not like saying it's not there, but it's not something that I see as like the likely range of outcomes. So that's the Hoosiers. Brings us to our bottom of the league last year, the bottom five. Three of those bottom five teams won 7 games in the league. Maryland, Northwestern, and Penn State. We'll start with Maryland. New coach and Kevin Willard. Kind of the outcome we all kind of expected from the moment that Mark Turgeon bounced. Cool. Different looking roster, but I think Turge generally did a nice job of filling in the pieces to a point where this team has turned an upside. They're relying a lot on the transfer from Charlotte at point guard, Jameer Young, and we've talked, Brad, about the struggles of these mid-major up transfer point guards, a lot of them just not hitting, but they're going to need him and Donald Carey to really remake this backcourt. Carey, well-traveled, Mount St. Mary's to Siena to Georgetown to now his hometown school, Maryland. But that duo with Hakeem Hart and Dante Scott, returners, proven solid production guys. And then Julian Reese up front, who was probably better than Kudus Wahab last year. The bench is very questionable. They're going to need some of these guys who are really not that proven to step up and give them minutes. But I think there's a starting five here that's pretty talented. And Willard, I don't think he's a superstar coach, but he's pretty solid, Done a nice job at Seton Hall. Guy I think we believe in enough to say that he'll put a pretty competitive product on the floor. And I think this is probably a tournament-level starting five. I just don't know that they have the bench, and I have enough questions about Young at point guard just to hold off.
Yeah, this is a team that could easily make the tournament as like a 10 seed or something, or 9 seed. I think maybe like just a little short on talent. Like maybe you wanted one more starting level transfer instead of some of these guys that they took to fill out the roster. But this team could definitely make the tournament. They'll definitely be pretty good. I have them at 56 making the NIT, but I like the Scott and Reese front court. I think giving Reese some more minutes, letting him loose a little bit is going to be great. I'm sure you know, he isn't at the same skill level as like Sandro Mamukelashvili, but I think Willard can probably do some of the things he did with Mamu with Reese.
Yeah, I don't think he's nearly as skilled.
But he has some skill. He moves well. He's a lefty. Great size, and I think he'll add a lot of skill level to that five spot.
I think he's a breakout candidate. I just don't think he's like a Mamu type at all.
And Mamu's an NBA player.
That's true.
He did a very high bar.
I'm interested, actually. In the backcourt,
they have some nice kind of versatile wings in there.
Yeah.
But, you know, best player, Jameer Young, as a transfer point guard, that's
a
little concerning based on what we've seen over the past few years with these transfer starting point guards.
I think there's a case that Dante Scott's that guy. I also think Dante Scott, like, one of the things I'm interested with this team is it doesn't really go with Willard's ethos. If you look back at the years, I mean, he's liked to play two traditional forwards on the floor. Has generally liked to have like a rim protector, which they don't really have. But Maryland a couple of years ago had a lot of success with Scott playing as that like small ball five out of necessity, and it worked really well against these Big Ten bigs, you know, like Dickinson and Trace. And some of the other guys that were around the league, Travion Williams at the time, because it just pulled you away from the basket. It was a different look than everyone else was giving you. And I wonder if there might be some opportunities to do the same thing again here, particularly because the backup center situation here is Patrick Amelian, who's like a four-man who didn't really cut it at Western Michigan. Callum Swanton-Roger, late signee. It's pretty ugly at like the backup five spots. Like, so maybe there's an opportunity there to get Scott on the floor and get some interesting mismatches. I do really like the kid Noah Batchelor. I would not be surprised if Noah Batchelor. And Jahari Long's probably going to have to play a little bit. Like him and Martinez. I actually like these backup guards more than like probably on paper people should. Between Martinez, Jahari Long, and Noah Batchelor, I think they've probably got three like decent bench guards to work with. And I think that does give you some opportunities to play smaller and put, you know, Scott in at the five.
Yeah, Long's like a big, like playmaking guard. He's a poor man's AJ Hogard.
It's interesting.
And Willard had him in the rotation when he was healthy for the most part. and he brought him over to him, from Seton Hall.
He got North Texas for him.
And then Martinez is known as a scorer
and defender. He was really a defender last year.
So this team, if Jameer Young doesn't fall victim to the transfer point guard curse, I think Maryland's a tournament team. I think if Young is just okay and he is not best player material, that they're probably more headed toward the NIT.
I am 58th, 10th in the Big Ten.
I am 56th and 9th, yeah.
God, we're like two spots apart. It's getting weird. We didn't consult, by the way, on this, really. I mean, we sent each other our lists, but, like,
We got to dive into the methodology. We have to come up with, like, our own unique methodology for like, valuing these teams and these pieces.
All right, next up, we have Penn State. Penn State, I would say, all in all, successful first season under Micah Shrewsbury. Some high moments, you know, beat Iowa. Protected home court really, really well, which is a huge deal in conference play. I mean, they won home games against Michigan State, Iowa, Rutgers. Those are tournament teams. Indiana, tournament team. Maybe four tournament teams at home floor. But did not get a road win conference play other than at Northwestern, which I can say this because I'm an alum. That's really not a ton. Like, that's not a real home court atmosphere, especially with no students on campus, which is when they beat them. That was a horrible game. Weren't overly efficient offensively, played really, really slow. but, you know, kind of played smaller with, you know, Pickett and Sessoms and Lundy and Miles Dredd around John Hara, and with a kind of unorthodox team, kind of found a way. Lose Sessoms, lose Hara, who I think will be forgotten about how valuable he was. But you bring back Dredd, you bring back Lundy, and you bring back Pickett, who had a very nice year for the Nittany Lions, my former Siena Saint. And now they bolster it up with transfers in the backcourt with Cameron Winter and Andrew Funk. Winter from Drexel, Funk from Bucknell, kind of your traditional best player, grad transfer move. Winter, that stat sheet stuffing point guard. Funk, a big time shooter. Big question here is center. Huge hole compared to the rest of the league. You're playing a freshman, not even top 100, and Keba Nije likely is the center. Starting center, you're going to have Michael Henn.
Hey, what about Mikey Henn, seventh year senior?
Fifth Division I school.
He's going to go in and just shoot the lights out.
Yeah, I don't think so. Never averaged double figures across his stops at Portland, Denver, UC Davis, and which one is the last one? Cal Baptist. Off to the Big Ten, my friend. Let's do it. But the guards are great.
Figures. He's got to stretch that floor.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he shot...
I just don't know how this team's going to rebound.
30% from three last year. The year before, 40% from three.
This team's going to get hammered on the glass.
But everyone's going to shoot it. It's when true. When Henn plays over Angie.
And Shrews is a good coach, I think. I'm buying Shrews.
We don't necessarily know that. He has all the buzz. Similar to Kyle Smith. He has been one of the anointed coaches.
He's a sharp-looking guy. Sharp-looking young coach.
He's certainly been anointed as one of the do more with less sort of guys.
The question is, do they have enough here to like really move the needle from last year? Like, I am 77th. That feels like...
Oh, I'm higher than that.
Ooh, really?
I have them...
With no center?
I am 64th.
See, I feel like 77 is a little high.
I think you're kind of underrating some of the pieces they have. Yes, the hole at center is pretty gaping compared to, like, John Herrer and Mike Watkins and these kind of big physical dudes that they've had.
Just even Mike Watkins at the tournament team.
Absolutely. But everyone's going to shoot it. And, like, Lundy and Pickett have been very productive.
Jalen Pickett's
and Cameron Winter's supposed to be pretty good.
Jalen Pickett is not like a superstar in the Big Ten.
They don't need a superstar.
I can't get there. I really can't.
I think if everything breaks right, this team could make the tournament. But I still have like 11th in the Big Ten.
Okay. I'm 77.
Even this is a pretty good bench. I mean, Andrew Funk is a grad transfer, and then you have about three top 150-ish, top 100-ish guys.
This feels like talking into Boston College.
No, this team is way better than Boston College.
I think they're better. I don't think they're way better.
I mean, Jalen Pickett's way better than Mekhi Ashton-Langford.
Yes.
Seth Lundy's way better than TJ Bickerstaff.
Yes.
Cameron Winter is way better than Jaden Zachary.
All right. I have Penn State's 11th and 77th. You have 11th and 64th. Then we have Northwestern. We discussed Northwestern a decent amount on this podcast, but I'll still give you the state of the program in case you're new. The state of the program is not good. They improved last year again marginally, but not enough to actually matter. They lost a bazillion close games. As evidence, you go through their record. They lost by 5 to Providence, 4 to Wake Forest, 6 to Michigan State, 4 to Penn State, 8 to Ohio State, 7 to Maryland, 6 to Wisconsin.
It's such a loser mentality to like remember 3
to Illinois, 7 to Illinois, 6 to Purdue, 7 to Penn State. That's unbelievable.
This is real 14 and 17 energy, counting your close losses.
Oh, I'm not pro this love banner of thinking, but Chris Collins is. Because Chris Collins walked into the post-game press conference after they got destroyed by Iowa. They lost 112-76. And he had the audacity to sit up on that podium. And want to know what Chris Collins said? Chris Collins said, well, you know, the previous year we won 6 conference games, and this year we won 7. And the year before that, we won 3 conference games. So we're improving. And we won a Big Ten tournament game this year, which we hadn't done in like 5 years, which, ignoring the fact that that's a horrendous thing, that's absurdly bad. You had, you know, the program is at a point where they've built solid teams that have not found ways to win games. And at some point, that reflects on the head coach, because it's happened 3 years in a row with very different rosters, young teams, old teams, teams built around different things. They just cannot finish. And will that change this year? I don't see why it would. Pete Nance departs. They're probably going to be in less close games, quite frankly. They lose Pete Nance, who's by far their best player. They can play through him in the post. They can play through him on the out top. He made threes. He defended. He was really good. And they lose their backup center, Ryan Young, who was underutilized, was a really good kind of physical, you know, below the rim center. He's off to Duke. Nance off to North Carolina. Their backcourt guys, who I think are lauded nationally, particularly Boo Booey, is lauded nationally as like one of the better point guards in the country. Boo Booey doesn't get to the free throw line. He's not efficient. He's a good player. He's like a sixth man on a good team. He's not like he hasn't yet shown to be like an elite, like elevating point guard. And that's the only path for Northwestern this year to be competitive, to be in the mix for the postseason, is Boo Booey to become that elevating point guard. Because the center situation is much worse. They're going to start Titus Verhoeven, the UTEP transfer there. Otherwise, they weren't active in the portal, didn't really add through that avenue. I like Julian Roper. Audige, maybe there's a bounce back in there. He was dreadful a season ago. But there's a lot of reliance. I mean, this bench right now of Ty Berry, Nick Martinelli, Brooks Barnheiser, Luke Hunger, and Matthew Nicholson is pretty bleak. And I think this is a team that should be in the mix with Nebraska for the worst team of the Big Ten. And if that's the case, then, you know, I think that'll probably be the end of the Chris Collins era in Evanston.
It is pretty hilarious that their former 3-5, Miller Kopp starting in Indiana,
yeah,
Pete Nance starting and will be the top 50 player in the country at UNC, and then Ryan Young will be like the 8th man at Duke.
All came in the same recruiting class.
Young and Nance are going to be like key contributors to top 5 teams.
And the last member of that recruiting class, Ryan Greer, he's like support staffer at Notre Dame. So
it is funny because on the message boards, Providence fans had a conniption when Providence did not recruit Luke Hunger. Luke Hunger's parents went to PC. That's like the most important quality in a recruit, obviously.
Okay, it's not sure.
Skill level. But family relation.
Luke is going to have to play. I mean, Luke is going to have to potentially start.
I can't wait to revisit this when he averages like 2 points a game this year.
I mean, he's going to get recruited after Chris Collins gets fired. He's going to recruit out of the portal. It's like a freshman effort, 6-5, big guy, high major.
He's not starting over Verhoeven, right?
I mean, Verhoeven averaged 6 points a game at UTEP. I don't think it's unbelievable.
He's not unrealistic. Able to score. He's going to block some shots.
Yeah, I don't think it's unrealistic for Hunger to overtake Mr. Verhoeven throughout the year.
Barron's always been like a paper tiger.
Barron doesn't have a.
He's like the least threatening starter in the Big Ten.
Actually, I'm gonna nominate Trayton Thompson for that honor.
No, Trayton Thompson. Once they like put him in last year, it was against Rutgers, right? He like went off.
He hit a bunch of pick and pop three, but that's what Robbie Barron does. Barron's got a little more shit to him than Trayton Thompson. I'm defending my boy Robbie, mostly because Barron
was a top 100 recruit.
I know. Robbie Barron has a dog named Smokey. Smokey the Baron. It's pretty good.
Chase Audige, Robbie Hummel had like open disdain for Chase Audige in the broadcast.
It's great.
With his just like reckless shot happy game.
Every game, like Michigan State, I remember this happened. Like Northwestern's at a tight game, like an important game at home against Michigan State that they kind of need to win if they want to be in the tournament mix. And Audige is just putting up like step back 18 footers when he's 2-for-9 on the day. And Robbie Hummel's like, what are you doing? Like, I don't know what Chase Audige is thinking. I'm like,
And then Bowie's good. He gets too much credit from the counting stats people.
Yes.
And
that's what I'm
saying. Too much hate from the analytic people. because his lack of efficiency is due to his role. I think he's better than a sixth man. I think he's a nice, solid starting guard.
Well, I don't think – well, so I guess my point is I don't know that you can win with him as, like, your lead guard because he doesn't get to the free throw line, he doesn't get to the rim, and he's not pass first. Like, I think there's, like, a narrative out there that, like – there's a narrative out there. Like, there even like some Northwestern fans think this, which is batshit crazy. But there are Northwestern fans out there that think like because Northwestern beat Michigan State without Pete Nance, like Pete Nance is overrated, and that Pete Nance like they weren't that good with Pete Nance being the centerpiece, so Pete Nance like wasn't that good. No, Pete Nance like created so many openings for Chase Audige and Boo Booey, set them up time after time, and they missed the shot. They missed the opportunity. They turned it over. I mean, the number of times that Pete Nance found like a wide open Boo Booey in the corner and he like bricked the three was brutal. And Boo Booey's also never had a season where he hasn't been super up and down because of the physicality. I mean, he's so slight. I mean, how do you have game? I mean, Boo Booey's had multiple, had like several games his sophomore year where he just was completely held scoreless. He had several games this year where he was just completely absent for most of the game. I mean, you can't do that when you're the best player, and that's what he's staring at on this year. So I'm intrigued to see how it works out. I think he's a fine player, but if he's your best player, I think you're in trouble, and that's why I don't think they're a top 100 team.
And then you have Roper starting over Barry?
I do. I think Roper's really good. Roper was awesome for them down the stretch. Physical, glue guy. I would have recruited the hell out of that kid in the portal if he had won it.
I think Barry will be a fine sixth man, but
yeah, he's fine.
The seven,
just a shooter.
7 through 10 is pretty brutal.
It's pretty brutal.
Matt Nicholson played 4 minutes a game in conference play. Brooks Barnheiser played 7 minutes a game in conference play.
Matt Nicholson committed 10 fouls per 40 minutes.
You get one foul per game, 1.4 points a game in conference. And then Hunger is a 3-star, and Martinelli was a late stackerizer, one of the few that still got to go to a high major.
Elon commit, now, Mr. Martinelli.
In the transfer portal age. But yeah, I think this is the worst team in the Big Ten.
I think Nebraska's worse, but barely.
Nebraska has so much more athleticism, though.
I agree.
They're a much better front court.
But Northwestern has a senior point guard who doesn't completely stink.
But yeah, they have a solid, nice solid guard. But could Nebraska have, if you combined the Northwestern and Nebraska rosters, you say, okay, Bowie's the best player, could Nebraska have 2 through 6?
They could, but like I like Roper enough that I don't think there's a big gap between him and like Wilcher. I don't think Audige is actually that much worse than like Emmanuel Bandamel, as long as sophomore year Chase Audige average like did shoot 40% from the field. Like, he wasn't a complete wreck. Last year's Chase Audige was awful. Like, last year's Chase Audige was, like, hurting the team every time he shot the ball. But I don't think he necessarily is that always. So.
Just kind of moving on to the Cornhuskers of Nebraska.
I was going
to
say we shouldn't spend any more time on Northwestern.
The one positive I'll say about this team is that kind of similar to what Rutgers can do if they played Mulcahy at the one. I think Nebraska can put out like a pretty big, versatile lineup.
Yep.
Bandamel has great size for a point guard. It is very scary he's going to be the starting point guard, even though he wasn't like that at SMU. I know that you like Griesel, right? From North Dakota State.
He's very good. He's very good.
I like Wilcher, big, physical, multi-positional hitch. Juwan Gary was good at Alabama, played some small five, played some four, super athletic, energy guy. And then Derek Walker had a good year last year as a physical five man. I know in terms of their bench is pretty soft, but Blaze Keita was a great JUCO recruit at center.
They've got four usable bigs.
Wilhelm Breidenbach was a top 100 recruit.
I love Wilhelm.
The floor a little bit.
He's my spirit animal.
Maybe we'll get some lineups with Breidenbach and Walker together. Maybe Gary at the three, go super big. And KZ Tominaga played a lot last year. I'm not a huge Tominaga guy. He can shoot, but he's kind of wild. But I think Boo Booey is probably the best player on Nebraska if he were on Nebraska.
Yes.
Which I think says something about their lack of talent. They have a lot of fifth best players here.
Yeah, the guards are just not quite good enough. They need one more guy who could score. That's the thing that holds me back. Like, I like Griesel, but like I don't think he's like a 14-point game guy. They need
Trey McGowan's.
Yeah. That would help.
Yeah. But what are you going to do?
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see if he gets the axe this year. Hoiberg still will be owed like 11 if they want to fire him and just spend $15 million on a Scott Frost buyout. Also spending probably, you know, several million more to buy out the whoever coach they hire from somewhere else. So it's not going to be a cheap process. And if Nebraska is at all competitive, maybe you just say screw it. So that's them. Last team
is another team to go.
Jeez. Yeah, Minnesota. That's fine. They were tied for last year. They had more teeth than I think we thought they would.
Absolutely.
But at the end of the day, they still just didn't have enough talent to truly contend. They went 4-16 in the league. Like, Ben Johnson got the year back on his extension, which, whatever. They've been snake-bitten again with the injury bug, with Isaiah Enan and Parker Fox going down in the preseason for like a second consecutive year. And those are huge losses. Just absolutely massive blows. Fox was an elite D2 transfer. Enan was a, you know, a guy who was proven in the rotation under Richard Pitino, long athletic forward, and really takes a lot of wind out of the sails here, because otherwise you kind of like the direction with Jamison Battle, who proved to be far better than I think we would have anticipated. You have Dawson Garcia coming in, which is a huge addition. In-state kid coming home, starred at Marquette as a freshman, didn't work out at Carolina, but more than worth the shot. Now you've got two really good players. But man, oh man, like, they're going to start like some combo of, you're going to start Talon Cooper, a point guard, but you're going to start some combo of your other two spots of Braden Carrington, Trayton Thompson, Joshua Ola Joseph, Taurus Samuels, Pharrell Payne, Jaden Henley, and Caden Betts.
Right. So that is underachieving low major transfers with Ojale and Samuels. Three-star freshmen in Carrington, Henley, and Ola Joseph. A reclassified three-star freshman in Caden Betts. And a guy who didn't play much last year in Trayton Thompson.
Yeah. It's a huge issue. And again, you couldn't have predicted this if you're Ben Johnson, that you'd lose Enan and Fox. But this is where, you know, every move matters. The margins matter. Because, oh, well, you know, you took Taurus Samuels to be your bench guard. That matters a lot more now that, you know, you can't play Jameson Battle at two, right? Because you need him to play like the three and the four constantly. Oh, well, you know, we're going all in on these, you know, local freshmen with Ola Joseph and Payne, who are good recruits. They're not great recruits. They're multi-year guys. They're not guys that you're expecting to contribute huge amounts as freshmen, particularly in this day and age, but they're fine recruits. But you're going out on that and you don't have the room, or you don't have the opportunity to go get, you know, another portal option, right? Like, I'm not even like worrying about fit. Like, if they had
gotten on the two guards short even prior to these Fox and Enan injuries.
Yeah, but if they had Fox and Enan, they'd at least be good at four of the five positions.
Yeah.
And Battle's a really good scorer. Like, if this team took, like, Juwan Gary, if this team had Trey Galloway, right? Like, I'm just, like, hunting benches here, right? Like, this team could really use, you know, Eugene Brown right now.
Absolutely. Yeah, because I have them having two of the top seven players in the conference.
I don't think that's unreasonable.
With Battle and Garcia. Obviously, we need a major bounce back from Garcia. He was sixth man, fifth starter. Then he had to go home or bailed, whatever the story is.
Team took off as soon as he left.
Yeah, and then everything started to fit after that. But he is a very talented scorer. He can score inside and out. has some ball skills, can play. I mean, he played the 3 in AAU, but I'll go as far as saying he can play 4 and 5. I'm actually pretty cool with the battle Garcia Thompson 3, 4, 5.
I mean, I think Trey Thompson's pretty terrible, but
I would say he's terrible. He's definitely iffy as a sophomore. But like Ola Joseph's a physical power forward. Pharrell Payne's a 4-star. You know, maybe they can piece the 5 spot together there. It's just that they just need another perimeter scorer slash shooter. And Braden Carrington's a 3-star. Gonna come down to him, or if they play 2 point guards with Samuels and Cooper. Samuels, I think, was at Dartmouth. Just kind of like a whatever player at Dartmouth. Which I don't mind that take for the backup point guard, you know, to add the depth. I think what really did him in was this Danny Ojale that they took late last year. And now he's still around this year, where he would never have played, you know, with Fox and Enan and Joseph and Payne and all these guys, if Fox and Enan were healthy. And or that, or taking Caden Betts early, which that Caden Betts early might have been a reaction to
the league. I don't have Mr. Ojale on their roster, so I think it's Caden Betts, yeah.
Well, so then they had an open spot then.
They do have an open spot, that's correct.
So then there is no excuse for not taking the 2-guard with the lack of spots, because they have a spot.
Agreed.
They couldn't find one, I guess. But.
Couldn't find one. I have them 84th. I do think it's an important year. Like, I think they need to be in the mix for the postseason this year, because you don't know Battle's future. This will be year 4. He's going to be like at least an Exhibit 10, maybe a 2-way guy. You don't know Garcia's future. He had 1 foot out of the door 2 years ago at, you know, Marquette. Has never stayed anywhere long, right? Like, I know they're in the mix with Dennis Evans, the 5-star kid, big, you know, hawking defensive center. He's on official visit this coming week. They seem to have a decent chance there, but like, it kind of feels like do or die. Like, they kind of got, otherwise I fear that they're just going to sit in the same, like, spin the wheels talent.
If not now, then when?
Right. You've got
two of the top 75 players in the country, 2 of the best 7 players in your league.
Right.
If not now, then when? I mean, both these guys could average 20 points a game. And it's going to come up. It's going to turn out to be the supporting cast that does them in.
Yep. Agreed.
Where did you say that you had them nationally?
84.
I have them 85th. So this is
all right.
The only team that we were like different on was Penn State.
Yes, and that was like 13 spots. It wasn't crazy. All right, let's wrap up this league real quickly here. We do our hot seat coaches as always. Chris Collins, red alert. Basically got the we don't have the money to fire you last offseason. So, or this past offseason, so I think this is probably it. 2 years left on his deal. They're going to be bad. That's an interesting job to potentially monitor. Otherwise, I mean, I don't think Izzo's retiring after this year. Hoiberg is certainly a hot-ish seat. You'd think that's the next most likely to go. But otherwise, I think it could be a quiet cycle for the league unless someone leaves unexpectedly. You know, you have rumors always of Juwan leaving for an NBA job. Maybe if Jet Howard goes one and done, that becomes more of an option. Chris Holtman's not going anywhere, even if Ohio State fans get frustrated at times with the lack of tournament success. Same thing with Brad Underwood, certainly not a hot seat. He's done unbelievable work there. So I think that's really the only two to watch would be that. And then the looming eventual Izzo retirement, but I don't see Izzo retiring anytime soon. Talk about the futures numbers for the championship. Michigan, the favorite for per Bovada to win the league. We're both taking Illinois. So take with that what you will. Indiana also in the mix, certainly, as well as Michigan. So any closing thoughts from you, Brad, before we hit the road?
Oh, I'm ready for the season. I'm done with previews.
Oh, it's killing.
We have SEC, we have mid-major, and that's it.
Yes, we do. Got a couple more to go. We will see you on
November 7th. I will be just devouring those bye games.
Yeah, I'm like it.
I'm so happy that Providence isn't playing until the 8th. So I can enjoy a Baylor-Mississippi Valley State game like no other.
I'm going to probably go to Loyola versus Fairleigh Dickinson on opening night. It's going to be glorious. Go watch the Fighting Tobin Andersons in action. All right, folks. See you next week.